Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Yeah, what's up? It's your boy Joel Ortiz, and I want everybody to make sure that they subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. Yo, Tim, I hope all is well. You my guy. I know these interviews are not interviews. They're actually conversations, and I appreciate them all. Yeah. Well.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It is official. All right, stop playing. Download and subscribe. Library Rap, the hip hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It's cold.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's your boy Foul March in the building. I need y'all to make sure you subscribe and download to the podcast, Library Rap. Hip hop interviews with your boy Tim Einenkel. You already know. Mankind exists. They must lost their mind. They underestimate us. Phenomenon. Phenomenon. Woman. Oh no, you don't want to miss your divine power. You're a phenomenist. Phenomenon. Phenomenon. Oh, hell. The grandmas, the sisters, the mamas that dissolve it all when they kiss us.
Fem Deadly Venoms, welcome to Library Rap, the hip hop producer with Tim Einenkel. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I want to start out just something simple. If you please could just, since there's three of you, just kind of individually introduce yourselves. I know we're missing Ladyfingers, and kind of give like a quick role, or I guess of what you do within the group.
My name is Breathless. I am the newest to the crew, but I'm getting old now. I am an MC songwriter, soon to start adding a little bit of singing to the mix, an all-around rowdy femme, you know?
I am Dakini Star. I started collaborating with Fem Deadly Venoms on the album Planet Femme. I believe that was released in 2015. Did a song called And So It Is, and then just started rocking shows with them, and then officially joined the group. Now I'm trying to remember what year that was. It's all just runs together. But I am an MC songwriter. We all do wear many hats in the group as well. I do a lot of back end stuff and promo and playlisting and all the fun stuff with this day and age of the evolution of the music world. And yeah, that's me.
What's good? My name is Aima the Dreamer. I am an MC. I'm a lyricist, poet, activist, visual artist. I do a lot of different things, like Keeney was sharing. We all wear a lot of different hats. And we are an evolution of femme brilliance and artistry. And I just also want to share Ladyfingers, who isn't on the call today. She is a founding member of Fem Deadly Venoms. She was a part of the first generation and has kept the flame burning. We're now, like I said, in our fourth iteration. She is an incredible singer, songwriter, turntablist, and music producer. She produced all the music on Planet Femme and on our current album, phenomenon.
So, you know, when I hear this album and I hear your music, it's like what comes through is great style, great delivery, great flow, right? And that it's incredible to listen to. So I, you know, have to ask, what were your early influences? And then also, like, what for each of you, what was that album or that track maybe that said, oh, this is what I want to do. This is, I want to use music to express my art.
I really got hooked with Queen Latifah and MC Light and Bahamadia. And then Diggable Planets really had an influence on me. I just loved the flow, the flavor, the way that the MCs just would weave in and out. And I started writing poetry at such a young age. I mean, I've got my journals from when I was like 8 years old and on, and ended up becoming a slam poet and then an MC. And I just I grew up in a household of music. My dad's a singer, songwriter, master guitar player. We had a studio in the house. So I really grew up with music as a way of life. And then just in 2005, I decided to make the jump into creating a livelihood with music and also creating a platform for women and women's voices to be heard, and also to create a collaborative atmosphere rather than a competitive atmosphere for women to just come together and create and uplift our voices. So that's a little bit of my history.
I am definitely influenced by 90s hip hop. I think when I was 13, I turned to my friend and said I wanted to be a rapper. And it's really funny, she reminded me of that recently. I got into poetry and music as a way of therapy. I never did imagine too far ahead that it would be a career or something that I would travel the world with, or, you know, experience cultural exchange with. It was really just a way of me to decompress and sort through what my life was like growing up. And I started off in the open mic scene. I also started off in spoken word. I think probably for a lot of us, that was a gateway into rapping. Lyricism is poetry. So I started off in the open mic scene. I kind of cut my teeth on that. And through the response of the crowd and building a musical community, it evolved into a career and into a sustainable creative force.
Man, both of those are such wonderful and similar stories. So just like the two of them, you know, I kind of was delved into the poetry world. And quite honestly, when I started really performing, I was in a singing group and I was the alto in the singing group. I was trying to be Whitney Houston, not Lauryn Hill, you know? but, you know, once I really started getting into my poetry, and I happened to be in a record store and I was rapping over the song that they had playing in the store. And the record store owner came up to me and was like, yo, do you like rap? Or I was like, well, not really, like, kind of, you know, I'm like, sort of, like, I just started. And they were like, there's this producer you need to meet. So I got connected to this producer and they already had this kind of group that was kind of like Rough Riders. But mind you, this is in Omaha, Nebraska. So it's like on a different level, you know? And I was one of the few females in the group. And that's where I really started getting into songwriting and performing and really learning the business and the game. And beyond that, went on my own doing solo stuff for the longest time. Influenced by like Lauryn Hill, Queen Latifah, Jay-Z, Nas, you know, even Public Enemy were all influences of mine, but also Stevie Wonder and Nat King Cole and Tchaikovsky. So I feel like I've had so much influence and never thought about even being in a group. But then we started doing shows together, myself and the Femmes, and in different capacities. And we started working in these other groups together. And they asked me to hop on a song. And I really dug working with them. And I dug doing shows with them. And I really enjoyed the sisterhood. And it just kind of meshed. And next thing you know, the synergy just created the fourth generation of FDV. And here we are today. I think really creating a bountiful pathway for women, thems, theys, people of the divine feminine to really find a space to see themselves.
Dakini, you mentioned something that's interesting. You mentioned the creating something that's more collaborative among females versus competitiveness, right? And that's something that's constantly, you know, there is always that kind of dichotomy with journalists wanting to, you know, there's a woman on, journalists wanting to find another woman to kind of make some stink or try to get some, you know, something buzzworthy. And that's the only purpose of having that interview, right? And I remember years ago, I had an interview with Rod Digga, and she said she was on a call for like 20 minutes on hold. And then the radio station put her up and asked her a question about another female artist. And she was pissed because that was the only reason why she was on, was to talk about this other female artist that she had an issue with at the time. How do you, and this could be all for all of you, but how do you fight against that? Like, how do you create this, you know, you guys are this collaborative movement, and then you do have this constant like push to try to pin female artists up against each other.
Right. I feel like that there's a lot of sensationalism around the competition between femmes, female identifying people, women. And I think how we're fighting against it is that we're unified. We've created a unified container where the only ones that we're competing with are ourselves to be better. And we push each other to be better and to step outside the box and to evolve. And there's a support within that container because we all trust each other. And I think that's kind of where I'm coming from. You know, way back in the day, I created a collective called Goddess Alchemy Project, and I've been rocking with Aima for, I mean, I want to say almost 20 years, 18 years maybe. We had that common vision as well, because we would see each other. We'd be at the open mics and we'd be literally fighting for airtime, fighting for a mic, trying to get some time with mostly, you know, male MCs. So I think that one of the ways that we are, you know, fighting that is to just have a unified force of femme voices in the music, you know, I don't music industry, whatever you want to say, but in music in general. And we're kind of creating a different, something different, and hopefully inspires and uplifts the next generations and the youth to kind of see that and see like, hey, we don't have to be pitted against each other. We can support each other. There's space for all our voices. We can amplify each other's voices and not engage in that sort of sensationalism of the women, you know, and the femmes being pitted against each other.
Aima, you talked about a therapy and using your art as therapy. And you just to think that therapy, or, you know, when someone's going through something that's very personal, and the fact that you went on an open mic and shared that publicly, how did you get the nerves to do that? I mean, you know, like, I would be scared shitless.
I'll tell you the truth. I came out of the womb a performer.
Nice.
I was born with the nerve, honey. I always was playing and theater is another element that saved my life in high school. I always had, you know, a feeling for expression and exhibition. So I didn't go into the open mic scene completely, you know, brand new. I had like some childhood performance you know, experience. So I had already had the nerve. Now, how did I get the nerve to put my heart out there? Because that's really like what you do, especially as like musicians, you bare your soul, leave it all out there. And then, you know, then you're like open to other people's opinions about your life experience and your truth. And how I got the nerve to do that was practice, practice, practice. It is a muscle that you build and it gets stronger and you get stronger in your voice and your conviction.
A practice in front of people or practice at home? You know, what is it? Practice in front of a mirror or practice actually in front of people?
I mean, I would say if we're talking about the nerve, it's definitely practicing in front of people for sure. And you know, like I was saying before, the open mic gave me real life experience of being on stage, hearing my voice amplified. And then like Keeney was sharing, we came up in a time where there was a lot of ciphers. Now I think you see more showcases and more performance showcases, but when we were coming up, mm-hmm. and B, like chime in if you feel this, like there was a cipher culture. And so the culture was to be in a circle, to be in the music and to be, you know, in the space where like you're speaking, you're rapping, you're singing. So yeah, the practice of actually express, you know, showcasing that. Mm-hmm.
I was literally just in a cipher 2 days ago here in Atlanta and, you know, round circle, everybody spitting, everybody grabbing for theirs kind of thing. And it was difficult, quite honestly. There were a couple of women there, but it was difficult to break that space. And when I started to, someone, you know, another guy started rapping the same time as me, but he saw and was like, you know, let me stop and make space for sis. And that's what I'm talking about though. You know, don't just always overtake and try to maintain the space, but allow space, allow is not the word I'm looking for, but leave space. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciated that. So that was different from what I've experienced mostly in the past, you know?
Do you think it's becoming more normalized? I guess normalized. I mean, I don't want to say normalized, but I don't know if that's the right word, but in terms of like just, okay, this is an example that I don't know if it's well connected, but I'll give you an example. My daughter plays travel baseball and she's 7 on a 9-year-old team and she has the respect of her friends who are boys who are also her age, right? And it's just, hey, it's Emmy playing baseball. It's nothing like it's Emmy, the girl playing baseball. It's Emmy playing baseball. Do you see that more now with women in hip hop or women in cyphers where it's not, you know, it's not Breathless the girl or Breathless the woman that, you know, playing rapping. It's Breathless. You know what I'm saying?
Unfortunately, no. It's still very much a woman's on the mic. Like that's how it's presented. That's how it's talked about afterwards. Like, and yes, I totally get, you know, told, you know, dope, you got dope rhymes. It's not ever dope rhymes for a girl, but at the same time, it's still separated. Like the women that were that were on the mic the other day, it was still separated, you know? And so it would be dope if we could get to that point. I haven't seen it personally though yet, but my fingers are crossed.
Yes. I'm gonna turn to the album. Can you break down the meaning of the title for you all?
Yes. Femnomenon is a term that I coined, and it is for me, it's inspired by, you know, the idea of being phenomenal. Shout out to Dr. Maya Angelou, phenomenal woman. It is like the embodiment of all of our greatness, our standing in our divine femininity.
This Breathless, I would say for me, phenomenon, it almost feels to me like the cape that I put on to feel powerful, you know, it's like my cloak. the term itself, what it embodies, what it feels like when you hear the album and the title track, you know. Yeah, it makes me feel powerful. It makes me feel like I can do anything.
Yes, I love that. It's I feel like it's become a whole world. It's the Phenomenon Manifesto. It's the, we call our people that listen to us, fans, supporters, the Phenomenists. We want everyone that hears this music, that's touched by this music, that it's inspired by this music, to feel that upliftment, that empowerment, what it is to stand in that divine feminine power and really own it, and also reflect it out, back out to the world. I really feel like this, that kind of energy does create change. It does create ripples. And for me, that is like the hugest part why I'm so driven to always continue on with music, because I feel like it is A, the universal language, B, the most effective and amazing delivery system for messages and for to create change and inspiration and empowerment. So I feel like that to me is what the whole Phenomenon movement is.
Oh, what I really like about not just the lyricism of the track of the album, I really like that there are horns throughout the album. Not yes. Obviously every track, but most, you know, and they really stood out, and they just work perfectly with all your voices. I want to, for each of you, or, you know, or whoever actually wants to answer, just what are the significance of the horns for you all?
Well, I just want to say shout out to Jazz Mafia for putting those horns, Adam Thies, for the blessing us with that beautifulness, and Nicholas Payton, also the incomparable, for blessing us with such beauty. That's where those horns came from, but someone else can speak a little bit more on it if you want to.
Just real quick, we all collaborate with the collective Jazz Mafia, and so we're all immersed in that, the power of live instruments. So we really wanted to get that feel on the album. It just creates that depth and that richness of it, just enhances the music and the lyricism. And then we also have Shayna E from Jazz Mafia on the strings and the violin up in there as well.
Yay, so, Shayna.
Yeah, say that.
Lady Fingers is obviously not here with us, but one thing I really love is that she doesn't shy away from the scratch. And she just, like, and then I went into a rabbit hole of like watching a bunch of live performances by her. but I really like that. I mean, I really like that, you know, the scratch is on your records. For each of you, when you hear the scratch, what does it mean for you? And then also, if you could go a little further and really talk about the collaboration between you four and how that works. I mean, I know you three are in different parts of this, the United States. So how does the collaboration work when creating music or creating this album?
First of all, these questions are super thoughtful, and I really appreciate that. And when I hear the scratch, to me, there's nothing more hip hop than scratching a record. You know what I mean? It's just like, when I hear the scratch, I hear the Bronx. I hear, I feel all the shoulders that we stand on. And it also feels like resistance. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is a music form of resistance, and you're not going to tell us like how to play instruments. You're not going to tell us how to play records. We're going to scratch that. So every time Lady Fingers touches her Lady Fingers to the record, it's just, I just want to just riot. It's the call. So I love that so much, and I can't remember the second part of your question, but that's what I feel when I hear the scratch.
Just about how does the collaboration between you four, how does it work in terms of when you create music, I mean, you guys, you all four are in different parts of the United States. So how does this work in terms of, I guess just focus on the album, and does someone come up with an idea for a song, and then you talk to each other, and then everyone goes to end of their separate places and writes, or are you all writing together at the same time, or does Ladyfingers hit you with a beat and then you write over that beat, or vice versa?
Well, with the Femnomenon album, we were actually all living very close to each other. So for this particular album, we had the pleasure of being in the same state and not far from one another. And the album was almost finished when we brought Breathless on. And we just, I think, and B can talk about this more, but that first track that we collaborated on, it was like sparks, fire, light bulbs. And so then we made more room to include her more and integrate her more, and then like officially like bandmate proposed to her.
I said yes.
We bandmate proposed to Bikini too when we brought Bikini in. And it's like, you know, I mean, these are women and femmes, like we see each other. And I think that's how it works in collaboration. Like we really see and get each other. The Ladyfingers, you know, would lay down the beat and we come up with concepts and we share those. But moving forward, we are discovering how that works. And B being the one who lives in Atlanta, you know, I love to like, you know, hear your experience, B, like, what's it like? Not living in the same place as us.
So like they said, I hopped in when, you know, the album was mostly done, but I was excited to hop on where they asked me to hop on, because there were topics that were important to me. And just like they said, this synergy, it was fireworks. And I'm like, yeah, let's do more of this. And then it ended up being a whole lot more. Like I said yes. Like I never thought I would ever be in a group, especially a group with femmes. You know, I grew up with three brothers. I'm not it's just not my steez, but gosh, I am having the best time ever. I'm learning so much about myself. I'm learning so much about collaboration. And being so far away, you know, I moved about a year ago. It definitely makes it difficult. Like every now and then I'll have FOMO if I can't get out to a show. but I definitely try. You know, I'm as bi-coastal as I can get. I'm definitely out there often. Like it's been pretty much every month or every other month now. So that it's working out. I'm excited to get working on new stuff because we're all going to get to kind of do it from scratch together. And so much has gone on. So I look forward to the creative process with this group. Really excited about where we're headed and where we're at right now. I'm just really grateful and honored to be among such creative, intelligent, just really outstanding people.
Yeah. One thing I love about your YouTube page is that you make sure to not just highlight the group, but you highlight individual work you've all done. And I kind of want to ask you about you three, about those individual, some of the individual videos that are up there. If Aima and Dakini, you both have songs up there with a live band. So Aima with SF, San Francisco Symphony, and Dakini with the Jazz Mafia. If you two could just briefly talk about what it's like to write over live instrumentals versus, you know, traditionally produced hip hop piece, and also your favorite instrument that to rhyme over.
My favorite instrument, I mean, first and foremost, you gotta have that bass. So if I were to choose, I would say bass, you know, is so important. It's a driving force of the rhythm of the rhyme, and of course the drums as well. I grew up playing trumpet, and I was in jazz band, and I stopped playing. Unfortunately, I've always wanted to kind of pick it back up, especially being surrounded by such amazing musicians, but they're also just such, you know, phenoms that I'm like, oh my God, what would happen if I picked this back up? But I would say, as far as writing, I'm equally inspired by electronically produced bass production and as well as live band, but I feel like it brings different energies, different flows, inspires me in different ways. And I love to just keep my chops up at all times. I love to just rock with bands and keep, you know, that the muscle, like Aima was saying earlier, that muscle going, whether it's, I'm sitting in with a band and freestyling and just feeling it in the moment. And also as far as the, you know, spatial difference of us being all not together, you know, thank the Lordess, we've got technology these days, and we all are able to record and send files and send tracks and keep that sort of synergy going. I feel like moving forward, we're going to be doing a lot more of that. And then, you know, hopefully booking a nationwide tour so that we can kind of just keep the femnominal movement going and the femnominon going in the future, you know?
Okay. Such a good question. All right. So my favorite instrument to rap over, write to, are definitely the drums. My lyrics are pushed by the drums, but my favorite non-conventional hip hop per se live instrument to rap over is definitely the horns. I feel like the polyrhythms that a master horn player like Adam Feast can lay down and throw down, and the whole Jazz Mafia crew, their horn section is above par. I think that's probably my favorite, like, non-conventional instrument to rap to. And I love in a live band as an MC, and especially working with jazz musicians or musicians who are prone to jazz music, there is no performance that's the same. Every performance is unique. And I love when there's call and response between, like, the vocalist and the live musicians. That just, like, gets my blood pumping.
Breathless, Amelia Earhart, such a great track. The lyrics in the video show and express a child that's being carefree, you know, not a care in the world, right? And then you have, at the same time, you have a woman that has an eviction notice and then a man who has lost his child. There's such juxtaposition here that it's what I think hip hop should be, and I appreciate the track so much. For you, what is that importance in your art to have that juxtaposition?
Wow. So I was grateful enough to work with Luis Montoya on that video. I wrote the storyboard and the storyline and everything out. I knew what I wanted, but man, did my friends and people come through for me. You know, these were all friends of mine who just showed up to help act out the whole thing. The little girl in the video, she's also been in one of my other videos. She's kind of representing me as a child. So it's kind of me kind of floating through this world, watching all these things going on, like all these things simultaneously going on, but like somehow you're finding a way to be above it. You're floating in a different space, you know? So the song for me, you know, nothing to do with Amelia at all. It's really about, you know, just finding some other space to be, even when it's tough. And I wanted to tell tough stories, you know, because it's going on. That's some people's reality every day, you know, unfortunately. Never coming down.
feeling like a falcon, like a Malcolm in Air, like I'm a Sada and Coretta with some Angela Flair.
So good. I want to turn back to the album. Like I mentioned earlier, I think My Body is one of my favorite tracks on the album. It's very personal, and it serves as a reminder that the physical and mental toll that sexual assault and rape has on its victims and also victims' families. How did this track come to be, and was it tough to write, I guess, mentally, or was it easy to write, quote unquote, easy to write because it needed to be written?
For me, it was tough.
Nothing about this track was easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was tough as hell, and it hurts every time to hear, and it's hard to perform, but necessary. Very necessary to get out.
What has been the response so far?
You know, the first time we played this out in the rehearsal, I couldn't even get through my lyrics without crying. I think I cried like 3 or 4 times. This is a story I'd never my story I had never even really told anyone. And it, for me to put this on a record, was so vulnerable, and the most vulnerable I've ever been to telling the story. But it was so worth it, because the first time we played it out, you know, Aima did a precursor sort of trigger warning, you know, said we stand with survivors, invited femmes to the front. And then I just got chills talking about it because it was so powerful. And after the show, we all had people lining up to talk to us about it, how it impacted them, how it brought up their own, how it gave them permission to even admit to themselves their own stories. And for me, that is just it right there, like that power of music, to be able to, you know, like also like Aima was saying earlier, this form of therapy, we kind of like use this as an alchemical process to put out our stories and also create an anthem of our body autonomy. And then that in turn helps others.
I'm just sitting with what Dakini and Breathless said. I think they said so much, and I would just add that, you know, that there's power in numbers, that we are not alone. And when we like lean in, and share, then we create space for that interaction, but also we bring things to the light. And I think right now we're seeing that in a really big way, in a lot of different ways, you know, from what's happening right now in Iran to what's happening with Roe v. Wade to the Me Too movement. And, you know, as MCs and artists and people who have, who get to have the mic, and we get to have people's attention, and, you know, we get to like hold the attention and intention. Songs like My Body, My Rules, those are truth saying songs. And I think they're really important, and it really means a lot that you resonated with that song.
And I think what you do really well, and I was just thinking now about the a track placement on your album, right? Is that you do, and I think it's, and I tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I think you do something very clever where with the next track and the track you end with, Bars, it's kind of, it's taking the power back in so many ways, because it's straight in hip hop, it's straight bars, right? That's what we say, you know, he or she got bars. So if you could kind of, if I guess final comments is why end the album with Bars?
I mean, that's Ladyfingers right there.
Right.
I think Ladyfingers did the mm-hmm. the track arrangement. Mm-hmm. You know, final words. I mean, Bars is like on period.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, Bars.
I said what I said.
Yeah, Bars comes through like the mic drop. You know, it's like boop, And there you go. End of the album. Have a good day, Femnominists, you know? Definitely.
That's great. I have no one else to say. Femme Deadly Venoms, thank you so much for being on Library Wrap, the hip-hop producer with Tim Heinekel. I really appreciate your time. I know we went a little long, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks
for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'm like McDowell's, but I serve a million verses that disperses from my jowls. I am power in a package. I devour, I do damage. Allow me to speak it candid. It's exactly how I planned it. I'm my greatest dreams expanded like black excellence rebranded. Damn it, I am beyond science. I'm the universe designer. I am raps, I lay traps, closing gaps while lips trap. They sit and jaw jack. I'm raw at that. I spit tar that thick black. Jump back, zoom in and attach. On top of the bars like chop chop do it. FEMC on duty. Tidal wave, syncopated beat. Flame in the game, gon' spit that heat. Only one way out, gotta get down. Mind tricks, do it like this. Fine chicks, got skills and flips. Tongue flick, little limerick. Delight, delish, like licorice. My crew got bars, we spit. Boku memoirs got gifted it. The truth by far convicted it. Lose all heart for wicked rips. Be on Mars, indigenous. We rock stars, antithesis. On spot bars, meticulous. It's outrageous, yo. It's contagious, yo. Call your bitch, I'm collecting payments, yo. Make money where my mouth is, though. It's outrageous, yo. I'm sick. It's contagious, yo. Call your bitch, I'm collecting payments, yo. Make money where my mouth is, though. Way back in the day, life in the bay. Kitty on the block, Jimmy like Bay. Lyrical misfit, born to rip this. Top of the track like a dominatrix.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.